RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
I can't think of a better way to end the week here at RCR than talking about travel with our travel man, Tim Malone, who's back. We've had quite a few chats now about travel. Tim, welcome back to RCR. Good to have you again.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be here.
All right. So, well, there are the obvious headline stories we've had in the last, a couple of weeks now. Turbulence. I want to get onto that shortly, but this caught my eye to start with, and that is sharing pics of ourselves on holiday, which is, seems to be a natural thing to do, and maybe even taking images of, you know, all the paraphernalia that goes with it, like boarding passes and, you know, kicking back on the flight and consuming the goodies and then posting it online. Doesn't sound like much could go wrong with that, Tim.
Well, we all love to share pics of ourselves on holiday, yeah, and it's tempting to take a pic of your own boarding pass with a glass of champers and post it online at the start of the holiday when you're all very excited, but there are a lot of things that can go wrong with that. So last week there was a report of video surveillance recently caught the image of a young man photographing the boarding pass of the person sitting next to him in the departure lounge. And then he used that photo to get onto a Delta Airlines flight where he hid in the toilet and waited until everyone had boarded and he thought he could nab an empty seat. Meanwhile, the genuine ticket holder was also allowed to board, even though her ticket had shown as already scanned at the gate. Now, you wouldn't think that would be likely, but that's actually what happened. Unfortunately, there were no empty seats and the aircraft had began taxiing before the flight attendant realised that there was someone standing there without a seat. So the plane returned to the gate. The imposter was arrested. That's a more serious example of what happens. But the other thing that can happen is that most people would know that the Air New Zealand website only needs the booking reference and the name for you to be able to retrieve the booking. So if you've posted your boarding pass online, the chances are it'll have the airline reference and your name on it. So that means that somebody else could use that to check in for your return flight, for example, do an online check-in, or they can do some more humorous things. I mean, I've booked a vegetarian meal for someone for a friend who's not a vegetarian. I once booked a wheelchair for someone who didn't need a wheelchair. some grief at the check-in. So those sort of things, they can lead to security issues as well. It pays to, if you're going to take a picture of your boarding pass, just make sure that you put the glass of champers over the top of the airline booking reference and don't show the barcode either, because that's useful to some people too.
I haven't seen any warnings or anything like that in any of the booking processes and check-in processes and having the boarding pass spat out to advise me of that vulnerability that I can recall.
No, that's right. And internationally, this can't happen, but domestically, again, years ago when I was in my 20s, I booked myself a flight to Christchurch, and I booked myself as Elton John.
I'm the piano man or whatever.
My ticket, travelled to Christchurch. They don't check. No one. Yeah. When was the last time anyone checked your name on a domestic flight, Paul? They don't do it.
They scan it, and that's it. They just scan it, and it's thank you, and that's it. It's a 2-second process.
That's right. The tickets are legally non-transferable, so you can't book as Paul Brennan and give your ticket to me as Tim Malone. You're actually not permitted to, but I'm sure a lot of that goes on because they simply don't check that.
Just reminded me, 20 years ago, and it was a dare, and it was at Christchurch Airport. We were waiting for someone, and I managed very easily to persuade the announcer who did the call over the PA, you know, when you call, could so-and-so and so-and-so please come to the information desk? And I asked if he could call Mr. Colonoscopy. And they did. I could see people sort of like, sort of giggling to themselves. I know it was sort of a mature thing to do, but, you know, it was a dare. Anyway, he never turned up, obviously.
I guess I had been late for the flight, they could have paged Elton John. And maybe there would have been a mob at the departure gate.
Would Elton John please come to the departure gate?
I'll make sure you next time.
Follow the yellow brick road while you're doing it. All right. So let's get on to turbulence, because, I mean, we've seen some pretty bad images of, you know, panels from inside the cabin of a 777 and other airliners, and all the, you know, oxygen masks dangling down, and the trolleys in disarray everywhere. Clear air turbulence has been around since, you know, we've been flying that high. Some are saying, or trying to connect it with climate change, there's more severe clear air turbulence, let's say, around than there was. I don't know about that. But what did you make of those images and the stories we heard? Quite frightening, right?
I think so. Every few years, a serious incident happens. There was quite a serious one on the 10th of July, 2019. I looked up a couple of these, and it was an Emirates Airbus A380 cruising at night, encountered unexpectedly severe turbulence approximately 13 hours into the 17-hour flight, and there were 27 occupants seriously injured as a result of that. So that was quite a serious one in 2019. They happen quite a lot, and I mean, I can remember over the last, since 40 years ago when I began travelling quite frequently, turbulence was a regular occurrence, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes it's severe, sometimes not. But last week, a Singapore Airlines flight from London to Singapore hit clear air turbulence. One person died from a heart attack, in fact, but the heart attack was probably caused by the fright in flight, and there were dozens injured in that particular example. A week or so later, Qatar Airways also had another severe clear air turbulence strike, which caused problems. So, you know, one of the things that's highlighted to me is keep your seatbelt on. It's a pretty, quite a simple thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
None of those people would have been seriously injured if they were simply wearing their seatbelt.
I've never understood that, Tim, why people are lax about that, because I'm never lax about that, because I know what physics can do. And literally, as if that aircraft falls out underneath you, it's not that you're going up, but the aircraft's crashing down on you.
That's right, and it can certainly be quite severe. One of the phrases that we coined during the Kiwis coming home days, when we were bringing a lot of Kiwis home on empty flights, was the term lie flat economy. We all like to try and get three seats in a row.
Yeah.
But even when we achieve that, I always make sure that the seat belt's around my waist, because I've been on enough flights with enough turbulence just to know it's a simple thing.
What's the most turbulent flight you've been on?
Oh, look, probably going into Wellington, and you've done a few of those. I didn't bother with the lie flat economy on that one, but that can be quite severe. Sometimes Trans-Tasman can be quite severe as well. But you have to remember, pilots can do things to mitigate that. You know, they can reduce speed. If the pilot knows that they're coming up against clear air turbulence, then they'll slow the aircraft speed, which reduces the structural damage to the airframe, and it lessens vibration, so you'll feel more comfortable doing that. I think sometimes that technology allows pilots these days to avoid clear air turbulence more than they would have otherwise.
If they can see weather on the radar, right? Because you can see the intense part of a storm cell or whatever. But if you're crossing unexpectedly through the bottom of a jet stream, for example, where the wind's going the other way at 120 miles an hour, you can see how the thing can happen. I mean, that's a, you know, instantaneous transition from one state to an extreme opposite state, and you don't see that coming. You don't see that coming.
That's right. Pilots will typically make a pilot report, though, to notify air traffic control of the conditions. So that will quite often help aircraft that are following along behind them on the same route. And if you look at something like Flight Radar 24, around about, say, 11 p.m. out of Auckland, you'll find that the flight from there'll be two flights going to Los Angeles, a flight going to San Francisco. There'll probably be an American Airlines flight going up there the same. And they're all flying along pretty much the same line. So the one that's in front will often radio to air traffic control. And what it allows the other flights to do is they'll go at a different altitude, either lower or higher.
I remember once flying in a lighter aircraft that I was going to have a go at flying at the time, but it was too turbulent. And I realized how bad it could get because I couldn't read the instruments. There was so much vibration that that nothing was really readable.
That's right. You know? Yeah, that's right. I've heard pilots say that on large jet aircraft as well. They slow down to reduce the vibration so that the instruments can be read more easily. Absolutely.
We can say, though, to people listening, can't we, confidently, that the design and build of those airliners has so much threshold designed into them that it, I mean, it's going to hurt the people in the cabin, but it really, except for extraordinary situations, and I'm thinking of one back in Japan in the, I think, 64 BOAC 707 departing out of Tokyo. They had a bit of time, and the captain thought, it's a beautiful day, let's do an orbit of Mount Fuji. And what he didn't realize is, in certain conditions, there's an extreme wave of air that comes off Fuji. It's quite a high volcano. And that was enough to disintegrate the aircraft. So it's happened in the past. It's a long time ago. But I think people can be pretty confident that even if it's extreme, probably the airframe is going to be fine.
I think structurally, those like commercial jet aircraft can put up with, it must be a multiple of maybe 10 more severe conditions than they're ever put through. Just when you were talking then, it reminded me of the British Airways jet, and there was a book written, All Four Engines Gone.
Oh, yeah, I interviewed him, Eric Moody, the captain.
Yeah. That's so,
what a story.
Boeing 747 stayed in the air for, gosh, I cannot remember how long, but the pilot kept it in the air. You'll know if you interviewed the guy. Kept it in the air for, what, an hour or so while they tried to start one of the engines that was, they were all clogged with ash from a volcano, weren't they?
Mount Galunggung, it was, in Indonesia.
That's right. So an aircraft the size of a 747 or an Airbus A380, it's never happened to an Airbus A380, but it can stay in the air for how long? Quite a long time with no engines at all.
You've just reminded me, because I remember interviewing Eric Moody. He died a few months ago, actually, I saw. But he said this, and it's one of those really quirky things that can save you, okay? And that is the procedure for what they were encountering. Well, there really wasn't a procedure, but the way they pieced it together was that they should all go on oxygen, the crew. Mm. And the co-pilot's oxygen mask disconnected from the oxygen supply. And he couldn't, you know, with his position and everything, it was fiddly, he couldn't reconnect it. So Eric Moody had to make a decision. Do I maintain my co-pilot so he doesn't get hypoxia and pass out, knowing that I will lose altitude and I've got 10,000-foot mountains ahead before I get back to wherever they were heading, Jakarta? Or do I descend and trade altitude for oxygen? So he descended. Hard call to make. But what that resulted in is that they descended out of the volcanic cloud because they didn't know they were in one. And that's when the engine started, when they came out of the cloud. So if the oxygen mask hadn't fallen to pieces, they might not have made it.
Yeah. There's all sorts of incredible stories in aviation. I listened to your interview last week, Paul. UA-811. Crazy.
Yes. Yeah. What did you make of that? What a story, eh?
What an astounding story for that woman to have in her life.
Yeah.
The photos that she took, where she was sitting on board the aircraft. I was working in the airline industry at that time, so I remember that incident quite well. On its way to Auckland.
Yeah.
The plane was on its way to Auckland.
Cronin's penultimate flight of his career, second to last flight.
That's right, yeah. So if anyone hasn't heard that interview, I'd suggest going back and searching for it in the replays.
What really gets me about that story is that, and I've read a bit about it, is that back at United Airlines, the simulator base, they tried over and over again to reproduce what Cronin had done to get the plane back and its crew. None of them got it back. None of them.
Yeah. So incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I'm glad you enjoyed that. All right, so the rule is, any flight, really, isn't it? Seatbelt on. And any getting up and walking around, make it quick. Don't muck around because you want to get back to that seat-belted
seat. I think so. Yeah, and I fly an awful lot, and you know, there's nothing sissy about wearing your seatbelt.
No,
there's nothing admirable about not wearing it. You know, yeah. Just put it on. Make your life easier, and make it easier for the cabin crew as well. Because I sometimes think that they must tremble when they, you know, need to lift someone's blanket who's asleep to see if they've got a belt on. But they're going to be doing that from now on a lot more.
Well, nothing gets your attention like those news stories.
Yeah, that's right.
A couple of other questions. I know that United Airlines have saying that they're pulling out of New Zealand. This won't be the first time they're pulled out of New Zealand. So what, is that a contraction of the travel market there? That would be from stateside more than this side, wouldn't it?
No, they're not pulling out of New Zealand. They're still going to be flying daily to San Francisco, but they are suspending their Auckland-Los Angeles route.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah, so they're still here. Every day, and yep. they've never suspended their Auckland San Francisco route, but the Auckland Los Angeles route that they added that only 6 months or so ago, and I just think there's overcapacity on that route, so they've suspended it for 6 months. They plan on coming back in late October, I think it is.
Yeah,
on that route.
So yep. American is still coming here, though, aren't they?
American is still coming here. Yep.
Yeah,
but again, they have seasonal routes. They fly to Los Angeles and Dallas Fort Worth from Auckland, but one of those routes is only seasonal.
Right. Here's a question, because I'll be going back to Brazil shortly on another matter, chasing down an old airliner, which I've been chasing down for 7 years now. Surely there are opportunities for a carrier. I know they used to go to Buenos Aires for a carrier like Air New Zealand to, I don't know, go to Sao Paulo or back to Buenos Aires or Santiago. Why do you think they are not in that market?
Well, I was the country manager for Aerolíneas Argentinas for 7 years here. And so during those days, we actually flew daily. Aerolíneas Argentinas flew daily from Auckland to Buenos Aires.
What were the loads like, Tim? What were the loads like back in the day?
When I started, it was 2001, and we had two flights a week. My job was to start the airline up again in New Zealand. They'd been gone for 2 years. So when they first started, it was two flights a week. A year later, it was three flights a week. A year later, it was four flights a week. And by the time I left, it was daily flights.
Yeah.
So the loads were growing. Aerolíneas Argentina stopped flying the route. And because largely because of the country's economics, and I left just before that, Air New Zealand took up the route Auckland to Buenos Aires. And they were flying from Auckland to Buenos Aires pretty much up until the COVID disruptions occurred.
Yeah.
But they have no plans to go back there. And Argentina itself isn't a huge market to New Zealand, but Brazil is more so.
Yeah. We've got a lot of Brazilians here.
Well, there's Brazilians living in New Zealand. There's quite a good quite a large Brazilian community. But also, all of those flights always carried on to Australia. For example, LATAM, who used to be called LAN Chile, but now they're called LATAM. They fly from Santiago to Auckland, and it carries on to Sydney. So that's not a bad way of doing it.
No, and they've got a good network in South America too, so you go anywhere.
When you flew to Sao Paulo last Christmas, which airline did you go?
Yeah, back in 2019, LATAM. So we went Auckland, you know, the follow-on from Sydney, stopped at Auckland, bit of a turnaround, Santiago overnight, in the middle of the Southern Ocean, don't look down, down there. And it's a beautiful arrival at Santiago, by the way, in the morning of the Andes and everything. And then up to Sao Paulo, which is about another 4, maybe 5 hours from memory. Yeah. And then anywhere you want to go. It's a huge network, LATAM. It really is a big airline.
LATAM has hubs in has more than one hub. They have hubs in Peru, Argentina, different hubs. They're a multi-international airline,
And, of course, they had that mishap, too, across the Tasman recently. But that was caused by the seat malfunctioning, the pilot's seat.
So that was caused by, there were a few erroneous reports of what caused that. But in the end, it came to light that it was caused by one of the cabin crew members entering the cockpit with the pilot's meals. She bumped into the seat. This is as simple as this. She bumped into a control that pushed the seat forward, and that caused the pilot to slump forward. Honestly, it's a bit like that movie Flying High, but this is what ultimately happened. He slumped forward onto the control, and the plane went down. That was it.
Imagine having to explain that one. Apparently the switch was damaged, and that was a Boeing design issue. It was a bit of a cheapy switch, as it turned out.
Yeah, but that's a crazy story, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And they always say drop thousands of feet. I see the Singapore flight was in the initial news, was said to have dropped 6,000 feet. Well, that was a controlled descent, wasn't it, after the event, and I think it was only 150, 200 feet. But even that is enough to send everything crazy. So
it's the speed with which it drops. It just, this clear air turbulence can just drop straight down.
All right. And before we wind up the chat, what's hot, what's not in travel at the moment, Tim? Can you give us any bullet points on that?
We've noticed people going to Bali flat out, to be honest. Bali's proven really popular. It's fantastic value when you get there as well. There's two ways of flying to Bali. Air New Zealand go nonstop from Auckland, which is a bonus, or Qantas go via Sydney. Takes about 3 hours longer, but can save a few $100s. So if you've got a family of four, I'd consider looking at the Qantas option for Bali.
Okay.
Accommodation options, things like private villas with pools, with a private pool.
Yeah.
And honestly, a good quality one of those can be between $400 and $600 a night, which is
not too bad.
Bargain.
Yeah, for what you get.
There's also a lot of quite acceptable accommodation in Bali for under $100 a night as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't been to Bali before, so I don't know.
Took me a while to want to go there. I always thought it was a little bit dodgy, but Angela and I are heading up there in July again because I quite like it. It's a good place.
I just remember that poor Aussie woman, Chappelle Corby, I think her name was, who got caught up in that. And I don't know what to think about that, but that was tough on her. So don't take anything you shouldn't be having with you.
It's those sort of reasons that made me cautious about going to Bali. Also, the nightclub bombings and things such as, you know, there was a bit of publicity around Australians having their drinks spiked and that sort of thing. So, look, I guess I'm a conservative holidaymaker in Bali. I don't go to the nightclubs and I'll drink out of a bottle, not out of a glass.
All right. Tim, how do people get in touch if they want some travel information, bookings, whatever?
The simplest way to find me is just to Google my name, Tim Malone, travel agent, and lots of links will pop up.
I think it's our first chat since we came back on air. So great to have you back, Tim.
Oh, mate, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.